Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Thank you, one and all, for being with us tonight. At least it's tonight where I am. It could be whenever. It happens to be where you are, because people all over the world listen to us whenever they can fit it in, and that's so exciting. It's just so much fun that that's going on. So my guest tonight is Tina Irwin, who has been on before, and she talks about ghosts, which is great fun for me because I talk about ghosts. And her books, she now has volume two. Her books are called Ghost Stories from the Ghost Point of View, which is exactly what I believe is necessary for us to figure out what's going on. So we will be chatting with her in just a minute, but first, tonight's metaphysical musing. And I spent last weekend at the convention of the American Society of Dowsers, which happens every year, and I do a couple of talks, and which is fun, and, you know, I have my little rock star moments where someone stops me in the hall and goes, oh, that was so terrific. I want you to meet so-and-so. It's always fun when that happens. But mostly, I learn more than I teach because the people there have been doing what they do. Some of the old-timers have been doing what they do their whole lives. And some of them are water dowsers, which is what most people think of with dowsing. They can find the location for a well and tell you exactly how many feet down and how much water. And they are almost 100% accurate, which is amazing. But the range of things that people have been doing and that the stuff that they know is absolutely amazing. And one of the things I love about the convention is I am absolutely never the weirdest guy in the room, where in the rest of my life I usually am, because there are people who have spent decades going way out into some corner of inquiry that they are curious about, and learning things that nobody else really has run across. And that ranges through all kinds of different modalities of healing. It's all kinds of work with the spirit world and nature spirits. It's studying UFOs and aliens, which is the one that usually seems the strangest. It's just an incredible range of people. And with any group like that, there are some people who are extraordinarily eccentric and can't really explain what's going on in their understanding to people that don't already have some sense of that. And they come across as being really strange. But I love that they're there, and I love what they know, and I love finding the people that I can have a conversation with and saying, how do you do this? And what do you do that? And what's your latest work? And how did you get there? And I've known these people. I've been going to the convention now for, I guess, 8 years. And they're good friends. And, you know, we stay in touch online, but I only see them once a year at convention. So it's kind of a party where we enjoy each other's company for a few days. And I'm telling you about it because it's my life and I wanted to share it with you, but also because there are those people and those groups around you that you can get incredible amounts of information from. And one of the things about people who are eccentric in other countries, especially I think of the UK. In England, they love their eccentrics. They love people that are different. And everybody wants to say hello to them. Everybody has a conversation with them. Everybody knows that they are a little odd, but it adds color to life, and they're harmless and they're fun. And that's a wonderful thing. In this country, people like that tend to either wind up in psychiatric hospitals or become street people. And it's really horrifying. I worked nights in a psych hospital while I was on walkabout, while I was apprenticing, and I could see who the voices were for the people who were hearing, were talking to, in big air quotes, their voices. And typically they were talking to ghosts, which obviously led me to the question of, okay, if they're crazy and I can see the same thing that they do, and I live here 8 hours a day, but they live here 24 hours a day, is the difference that I have keys? No, the difference is that they can't manage their lives. And without being able to manage their lives in the real world, they needed help. But in any other culture, these people who were so connected to the spirit world would have been identified as children, would have been nurtured and taught by the elders of the tribe that had those skills, and would have grown into an honored position in the tribe where those skills would be useful. And for the rest of their lives, people would be coming to them and asking them for advice. Instead, people who have that ability in our culture, not all, some of them find a place for themselves. Some of them are wonderful mediums. Some of them do readings for people. It's all those people. But some people who don't integrate it that way, we see as being strange and crazy. And eventually they wind up in some kind of difficult and troubled circumstance. And it's one of the things that we just don't get right here, one of the many things. But one of the things that we really don't get right is looking at people who are different and not saying, what do you have to offer and what are you really bringing here, rather than saying, boy, you're a little bit too strange for me to deal with, and trying not to look them in the eye. And there are certainly strange people that are dangerous and that you don't want to look in the eye, but most of them, that's not the case. My dad used to say that absolutely everybody knows something that you don't know. And if you take the time to have a real conversation with them, you will learn things that you would never learn any other way. And it doesn't matter how mundane their life or their experience or their job looks. They know something you don't know, and they know it in depth, and they know it with a level of understanding that few people know. And the only way you'll find out is to get past the superficial appearances and really have a conversation with them, which they will totally appreciate. So I enjoy my friends at the Dowsing Convention, most of whom are not out at the edge, but some are. And I enjoy even the people out at the edge because I learn so much from them. And it's a place where they can be safe bringing what they know and talking about it. So look for those wonderful people and look for those wonderful places where you can have those conversations. It makes life so much richer. And it gives you pieces to the puzzle that is this bizarre mystery that we live in the middle of. So I encourage you to look for those folks in your life. And that's tonight's metaphysical musing. And now we get to have some fun with Tina Irwin. How are you doing tonight, Tina?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show. We had so much fun last time. As soon as I heard you had volume 2 of the book, I was like, oh, we got to hear what she's up to now. So since you were on last time, last May, people can find that show, which was fascinating. And there's a much longer version of your walkabout story. But give people a little introduction to what you've done and how you wound up doing what you're doing.
Well, I am, like a lot of people, started out with a little bit of psychic ability and didn't think much of it and did a few little things. And I went to high school, I went to college, I had to make a living. And in 1972, I joined the Navy. mm-hmm. and became an officer, met my husband. And from the time we were married in 1973, my psychic ability exploded. But I'm a naval officer, but I'm a psychic. So what do I do with that? And
yeah,
it's a huge conundrum because you're supposed to be this logical left brain person, but you see and sense things. And what I learned was that there are a lot of naval officers, especially since I worked for the submarine force and my husband's a submariner. When you submerge your ship, when you deliberately sink your ship, you had better be really psychic because you need to feel the conditions that are surrounding you. And so I met a lot of men with gut instincts
mm-hmm.
who are very psychic and some who did some astonishing things to keep their ship safe because they had a feeling. So everybody has psychic ability. Sometimes they just label it different things. So I got out of the Navy and tried a bunch of different things, but really my path was a spiritual one. So I started having classes, teaching different things of metaphysics, doing tons of research like you. There's never a day goes by that you're not open to learning something new. So I started with a grief book after my niece died, and I crossed my niece over. And I realized that people don't know what to say to you when a child dies. Well, that's true whether you have a divorce or you lose your job. Nobody knows what to say, and it's all a type of grief. So I wrote the grief book, and then I have a book on karma, and then I do so much remote viewing of houses and things like that that my daughter, my daughters-in-law said, you've got to put these in books. And so I now have all of these two ghost books and a third book. The volume three is on the drawing board. So these are the ghosts who tell me their stories from different stacks of time. Time is not in one straight line. It eddies and flows. And two people can occupy the same space and the same time, whether or not they're dead or alive, because they're in a different stack of time, but they're in the same space. So wrap your brain around that one.
Actually, I've seen that. Somebody invited me to look at a mill building where they were making it into shops in one area. Just nobody ever wanted to put their store there. And I went up there and I started to giggle because there were people from four different timelines, different clothing, different use of language, and they had no awareness of each other. They were walking through each other, but there they were, occupying the same space in four different times, including ours.
Exactly. And when you sift through those and you move them on from each stack of time, all of a sudden that location can calm down. Yep. And the people living in the current time feel a little less encumbered.
Right. Right. It's always so much fun to find somebody else who has run across this stuff and made some sense of it.
Well, it's pretty interesting.
Oh, yeah.
So I really do love what I do, and I meet some amazing people living and dead. Meet some very courageous people who died. And as we were discussing before the show started, I would say a staggering number of people, up to 90%, have no idea they're dead.
Right.
And there's a handful of people who do know they're dead, and they do some deliberate things that aren't very nice, or they try to get somebody's attention to get help. So it's a pretty interesting situation.
Yes. And that's why I love the stories that you compile into your books, because you have some totally wonderful and poignant and funny stories that about all these ghosts that you've run into.
They are interesting. That's a fact.
Well, we were also, I'd love to hear some of those, but we also started a conversation just before the show about the material that you're putting together of why some of the commonly used methods for getting ghosts out of a space don't work.
Exactly. I also have a publishing company because I published so many books. Everybody said, gee, how'd you do it? So we started Crystal Point Media and we published these books, some other people's books too. And my business partner found me because she has an exceedingly psychic child, and she didn't know what to do. So she looked, she talked to many different psychics, and they all said, you can get the ghost to go away if you burn sage and bring down white light. And so she burned mountains of sage, piles of sage. Her smoke detector went off, and the ghost is still standing there looking at her like, what? What? What is this about? And she didn't know what it meant by bring down white light. How much white light? How often? What is it supposed to look like? Do I bring it down to right where I'm standing? Do I do my whole building? Do I do my neighborhood? Does that make the ghost go away? What do I do with this? And so part of my helping her, and then, we evolved a unique relationship, was teaching her that sage is great for sausage and ceremonies, but it will never get rid of a ghost. White, and sage doesn't have the frequency to get rid of a ghost. It's great for ceremonies. It smells wonderful. But if you need to get rid of a ghost, you need to go back and look at the gifts that the Magi brought the Christ child. And if you ask any church-going child, what were the gifts? And they, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And then if you ask someone, what did they do? And they look at you and go, I don't know. It's gold, frankincense, and myrrh.
Right.
So what are frankincense and myrrh? We all know that gold, you need a little beginning with your life, a little gold, which has a super high frequency. Frankincense and myrrh are resins that come from these amazing trees in Somalia and throughout the Middle East. There's another resin called dragon's blood.
Yes.
If you've ever been in a Catholic church, you may have seen one of the altar boys, or maybe the priest himself, or someone carrying something called a thurible, which is this big silver thing where the smoke comes out. And so when the smoke comes out, then the individual, you see the smoke and it's clearing the church because it's dragon's blood. And outside of Rome, you have all these shops and they sell all of this big containers of this red, brick red colored resin. And you heat it and it becomes this red, looks like blood. It's a dark, dark color. And the frequency of dragon's blood is so high. And when you burn frankincense and myrrh, those resins are so high. Whatever is dark or evil or ghostly in your home has to leave. It can't handle that frequency. And the other element is using essential oils. Frankincense oil, so our sacred frankincense oil, and the oil of myrrh, and there are many others, especially frankincense and myrrh. You can wear those on your body and will make you a little less attractive to ghosts. How's that?
That's great. I actually knew about dragon's blood, but I had only seen it as incense. Didn't realize that it was what the Catholic Church burns. And it's in a number of traditions, it's what's burned to get rid of ghosts, to keep a space free of ghosts. So, and I know I've used frankincense for certain things as well, but didn't really make that association with the frequency being what was keeping the space clear. So, fascinating stuff.
Well, think about it. You wanted to give something to Christ who is in a physical body on earth.
Mm-hmm.
Something that would protect him. So my feeling is if it's good enough for a master such as Christ, it's probably okay for me too.
Right, exactly. Exactly. There's also an interesting medication made from frankincense, Boswala.
Yes.
Which is used for, taken internally for inflammation.
Exactly. It's an amazing substance.
Yep. So, actually, then, I wonder if you've used holy water at all or holy oil, because I have some Catholic friends and they use that for all kinds of things.
I do not, because I don't consider the priest any different from me.
Right.
We're all mortal people and not one of us is that much more advanced than another. And so anyone can bless the water they drink. Anyone can create holy water. It's the concept of the priesthood of all believers started by Martin Luther.
Right.
And so anyone can bless the water, or you can take a pitcher of water, and this goes back to Emoto's messages from water. right on the side of your pitcher. I have on the side of the container that has ice and my hot water heater, love and hope and compassion and joy and pristine health, all those wonderful words. And the energy of those words goes right into the water. When we redid my kitchen, we wrote it on the floor. We wrote it on the walls. We wrote it underneath the granite counters. So that the energy, as you're cooking and you're there, is one of the happiest rooms in the house.
Yeah, so. you can hide it anywhere because it doesn't matter whether it's covered or anything else. It's the vibration and intention of the word.
Exactly. It's all vibration.
Yeah. My water filter says, I love you, thank you.
Exactly. Exactly. I think those are very powerful things that people can do to raise their frequency. If you have a water bottle you take to work and you don't necessarily want people to see that, write it on the bottom. Your water's going to be sitting on love and happiness all day long with your coffee cup.
Right.
It's really a cool idea and it's very simple. So these are great tools you're sharing.
great tools you're sharing. So what's the most, well, what's the story that sticks in your mind that got into the book this time that's most interesting or funniest story?
I would have to say that this is not a funny story, but it's peculiar. And in this particular story, a friend of mine asked me to remote view his home in Santa Barbara, California. And as he's doing that, I remote viewed the house. He gave me the exact address of his house. And when I looked at it on Google Earth, because it really saves me a lot of time, it said, which address do you want? The house in Santa Barbara or the house in Scotland?
Huh.
And the address was identical, and it was a very odd address. And so as I started to remote view his house, I immediately was taken to Scotland. There's nothing going on in his house, but the house in Scotland, a child had, I can see this little girl standing there, his gorgeous black hair and beautiful porcelain skin, and she's looking at this house. And then she shows me inside the house. Her dad came home, and he was drunk, and he was angry, and she's trying to calm him down, and the other children are crying, and the next thing you know, he slings the oil lamp. And the whole place goes up in a conflagration. The whole place burns to the ground. She pops out of her body, and she watches her house burn. And she says, we're all dead. I know we're dead. And she had been standing there for probably 200 years.
Wow.
So moving her on, and when I went back to the house in Santa Barbara, that house was fine after that. And what we suspect is that he had a renter, and the renter left. And we think that the renter had some connection to that past life, and she brought that energy. And there is no coincidence. The fact that both homes had the same identical, super weird address was just beyond peculiar.
And it's so strange because you'd think a UK address might show up in New England, where lots of things are named for things in the United Kingdom, but Southern California. That is so odd.
It was very, very odd. And after I was done and I cleared the place in Scotland, the owner said of the Santa Barbara house said, oh my gosh, it feels so much better now. It feels clean and clear. And the only thing we could think of was his renter was the connector.
Right.
And she brought that energy and it needed to be cleared. So I cleaned up what was presented. That was the best I could do. And there were no other stacks of time influencing that moment, and that was, I can only do what's presented. Probably you're the same way.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a very, very interesting one.
Well, you can always ask what else.
I do. I've had one where I've had three or four different levels of time.
Right.
And how hard that was.
Right. Exactly. Let's make sure people know how to get in touch with you. What's your web address?
It's TinaIrwin.com, and it's Irwin with an E, not an I.
How incredibly clever that that's your URL.
Yes, it's my name. I actually have a domain name with that, so I consider myself very fortunate.
And the name of the book is?
Ghost Stories from the Ghost Point of View, Volume 2.
which I am looking forward to reading because your books are wonderful.
Well, thank you.
So much information and so much fun. So we're heading to a break in just a minute, and we will be back shortly, unless, of course, we get taller or something like that.
Well, Stranger. Cool. I'm 5'1", so anything's a help.
Yeah, I understand. My guest is Tina Irwin, and we will be back with more on the Farkas Files here on Empower Radio. Don't go nowhere.
A cat, and have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called inventnow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on and lost cat stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See? That's proof. You should go to the inventnow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Come to the forest. It's a place not so far away. A place where you don't have to mow the lawn or babysit.
I saw lizards and squirrels and bugs.
Ladybugs, caterpillars. It's really cool, actually.
A place where you don't have to make time for free time.
Lots and lots of kinds of species here.
Out here, you may even meet the mysterious creature known as the other you. The enchanted you.
It's magic what flowers do.
The adventurous you.
My favorite tree, yes, that one.
The free-to-be-me you. Ask your parents to take you to this not-so-far-away place. Come to the forest, where the other you lives. But first, stop by discovertheforest.org, a public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Do you get tired of styling your hair every day? And do you want a good hairstyle every day? Hi, I'm Sarah Schuster. I went on a website called inventnow.org, and after that, I decided to invent something too. Something called the Insta-Do. Just imagine, you just put it over your head like a helmet does, and you pick your hairstyle with the buttons on the side. And you can have instant hairstyle in seconds. People like it. People like Jeff Bart.
I like it.
And people like Kenneth.
It's this helmet thing, and it fits over your head, and it's
great.
Thank
you, Kenneth. You should go to inventnow.org, and it could help you come up with your own invention. After all, look at me on the radio now.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with my guest, Tina Irwin, author of the second volume of Ghost Stories from the Ghost Point of View. And I wanted to go back to intuition and people, not just in the military, anybody that does emergency work. I have never met anybody in that circumstance that basically doesn't live by intuition to keep themselves alive.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I go ahead.
Well, I had the opportunity to be trained by New York Police Emergency Service way, way, way back in the day. It was amazing what those guys could do, but it was also amazing how they could make split-second decisions that made no rational sense, but were exactly the right thing to do in that circumstance. I also got to talk to a Coast Guard rescue swimmer, and I think those guys are superheroes. I mean, jumping out of helicopters, who does that? They say the same thing. You do what feels right.
Exactly. I think that there are those occasions that you can't explain to somebody else why, but you take an action that's based on something else you're hearing, sensing, feeling. And I can give you a very interesting story on a submarine, if that's okay.
Sure.
When my husband and I were first married, we lived in bachelor officer quarters till we got into married officer quarters. And one of the guys who was in the BOQ with us was being court-martialed. And he was really depressed about it. And so we were sitting down one evening and we said, well, what happened? And he said, I don't really think I understand it, but he was on a fast attack submarine. There's two kinds of submarines. One mm-hmm. is a missile submarine and the other is a fast attack, and they patrol the oceans. You don't know where they are. They're gone for months at a time. So he's on a fast attack submarine, and they were operating supposedly parallel to the east coast of the United States in something called the Tongue of the Ocean or the Autech Range. And they thought they were parallel. And he was supposed to relieve the watch. He was a lieutenant. He was going to relieve the watch. And about 10 minutes before he was supposed to relieve, he wakes up, runs down to the other lieutenant who's relieving. He says, I relieve you now. And he says, no, I got another 10 minutes on watch. He says, no, I relieve you right now. Guy says, okay, dude. And as soon as he walks, 2 feet away, mm-hmm. the guy we're talking to turns to the control and says, right full rudder, emergency blow, all back full. Mm. So that when that submarine hit that mountain, it wasn't head on. I can't tell you how deep they were because it's classified and I have to kill you. but they hit a mountain, and instead of hitting it head on, which probably would have killed him, it was a glancing blow because he did right full rudder. He enabled the submarine, which is it's a big object moving through deep water. It doesn't respond like you can just walk and turn a corner. He had 10 minutes to get that submarine out of harm's way. And when they hit, of course, he's already headed to the surface. And so my husband and I are saying, oh, but my God, why were you court-martialed? He said, well, one, I relieved the watch early and I wasn't authorized to do that. Number two, I was shouting orders without permission from the captain or the navigator or the XO. And part of the court-martial is the issue of accountability. That was part of the investigation. And so you're thinking, oh, my gosh, how could they? He really saved the ship. And he really did. I saw that ship in the dry dock, and it looked like someone had taken a fist and punched, aluminum foil. It was all crumpled. And I mean, mm-hmm. this is an Electric Boat Division builds amazing submarines. So it was a HY-80 steel. It was pretty powerful steel. And it just looked like it would crumple. It was crumpled aluminum foil. And he said, I cannot explain why I had that feeling. Well, he was acquitted in the court-martial. The captain, the XO, and the navigator were not. They were so far off course. And they sometimes you can be 1 degree off course and it's going to be disaster. But this man could feel there was something wrong with the ship. Our hero. So he wins the karmic day. Because you're court-martialed, it pretty much destroys your career. So he got out, even though he was acquitted. And so he was there for that moment, and he followed that intuition. It was so powerful. He wasn't supposed to die that day, and neither were the other 125 men on that boat.
Right.
So it's a fascinating, absolutely fascinating feeling. I have a couple other stories, but that's a really powerful one.
And I'm sure there are stories like that everywhere in the military.
There are. There have to be.
Right. Where people know what they know and tell people to do things that make no sense from the information that those other people have. And exactly. It keeps everybody alive.
You can't explain it. It's like a friend of my husband's was supposed to get on a he was in Brazil and he was getting on a plane and he was headed back to Paris. And he was about to get on this Air France flight and this little voice said, "Don't get on the plane." And he turned around and walked away. And that was the plane that crashed in the Atlantic.
Wow.
And he said, "I can't explain to you why I didn't get on the plane. I have no idea, but I knew that if I got on that plane, I would die." So what does he say to somebody? If anybody gets on this plane, they're going to die. He can't do that. He can't. But he knows it's not his time to die. It's an interesting thing. It's a very interesting thing. I sometimes speak to parents of murdered children, and that's a really tough group to talk to.
Right.
And I asked this group a very difficult question. And I think there were 10 families in the room, and 9 of them had murdered sons. 1 had a murdered daughter. They're all teenagers. And I asked them if any of them noticed that their sons or that daughter did something unusual that made the parents think this, when looking back, he knew he was going to die. They said, "I know this is an awkward question, but does a person know when death is coming? Isn't that an interesting concept?"
Right.
And slowly but surely, they looked at the floor and shuffled their feet and they raised their hands, and each one told the story. And 9 out of 10 families said they saw signs that their son, the daughter, no, but the son knew, each one of their sons knew they were going to die. One kid was the biggest slob in the world. And the day before he died, he cleaned his room and he gave things away.
Well, yeah, that's classic.
And so it went person after person started describing, yes, he had done blah, 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 and then his whole personality changed right before he died, and he was just different. Or one kid said, "Mom, if I die tomorrow, can you please give my turtle to so-and-so?" So do we know when death is coming? Or are those occasions when we are able to know, and it's part of our makeup that we have a point in time when we aren't going to be here anymore, and there's a part of us that knows it? What do you think?
I think all explanations are true part of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to figure out what's true and gave the information to one particular individual in a particular circumstance, I don't think honors how many different ways people get their intuitive information. Because the range is so broad.
Mm-hmm.
So, and how detailed that information was. So the kid who says, "If I die tomorrow, give my turtle to so-and-so," has a different level of information than the kid who is suddenly feeling I should clean up my room.
Mm-hmm.
But people do that kind of stuff all the time. And I think people do those things to avoid trouble or death as much as a precursor to something actually happening. You know, that you do something differently, which had you done what you always do, would have put you in the situation of something terrible. And because you did this quirky thing that you never do, you don't even know that you were in danger. That the circumstances changed.
The circumstances changed. Or how many times have we been in a situation and something inside us said, "You need to leave now. It's not your time." I mean, it's happened to me over and over and over.
Right.
And I was trying to leave my house one day, and I couldn't get the garage doors open, no matter what I did. And I know all about the emergency things. And finally, I remote viewed the outside, and there's an angel holding the door down. It's like, I'm not supposed to go anywhere today. Okay, I get the message. And, of course, the next day, the doors worked perfectly, but I wasn't supposed to leave the house that day.
Right.
So I think that we have to look at these kinds of issues that come up, because we couldn't have anticipated this, because we live in this logical three-dimensional world where things are quantifiable. But when you accept the things that aren't quantifiable, it changes your frame of reference.
Right.
And I have one of the stories is called The Silent Sentinel in this book. It's in the last section of the book. And this woman asked me to remote view her house in Suffolk, Virginia. And I removed a lot of Civil War dead, and I thought I'd gotten them all. And I'm looking through her house, and there by her bed is a Civil War soldier. And he's standing watch, and he's got his rifle in his hand, and his head's down. And he looks like he just fell asleep on watch, standing up. You know, people can be that tired.
Right.
But when I, you know, looked at the back of him, the whole back of his head was shot off. And I'm seeing him in the moment of his instantaneous death. And he's standing right next to her, the head of her bed.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't know she's there. She doesn't know he's there. But she's suffering from chronic migraines. Could it be?
Yeah, really.
That her migraine has something to do with having a soldier next to her with the back of his head blown off.
Right.
So crossing that soldier over, how amazing, her headache stopped.
Right.
She attributed that to changing her migraine medicine, not moving on the soldier. So I can't say, oh my gosh, because we moved on the soldier, her migraines went away. I think there's a correlation. It was so bizarre for her. She could not go there. And so that's her choice. It was pretty fascinating for me.
Right. And there are so many things not even related to ghosts that could be affecting, in particular, sleep. You know, it could be the ley lines or vortexes that happen to go right through the bedroom, or electromagnetic stuff, or any number of other things, which is one of the things I love about the Dowsing Convention, is people are studying all that stuff, and I get bits and pieces of all kinds of ideas I wouldn't have heard of otherwise. But it's also fascinating to me how that stuff correlates with the ghost phenomena.
Yes, and you'll see a lot of ghosts on earthquake faults. I mean, here mm-hmm. in California, there are earthquake faults all over the planet, but California seems to have a significant number of them, and they can be little ones that never actually even had a quake, but there's a fault line there. And you'll see a lot of paranormal activity along a fault line.
Right.
And if you marry it to, you know, one of the ley lines, a Banker or Hartman or Curry line or some of the others, you have magnified the effect of the energy of a fault line. Because right. a lot of energy is leaving there. So I think you can kind of open a door to paranormal activity without realizing it. And then if you're doing things that are kind of dabbling in the dark arts, maybe you don't realize it, but you're now opening a door to more than just ghosts. And I think that's kind of an important thing to understand.
Right, right. And that's the conversation I have over and over again, especially about Ouija boards, which actually do work and are a fine tool for a trained medium, but not a kid's toy.
It's not a kid's toy. There's a house in, I don't know, some flat state in the Midwest, the Villisca Murder House. I think it's in Indiana or Illinois. And this house was on a ley line, and the Indians had it as an Indian burial ground. They would never live there because it was a toxic area.
Right.
We can't see what's toxic anymore. We can't see the poison ivy and the ant hills and all the things that told Native Americans, oh, you don't want to live here. It's toxic. Let's go over here where we don't have all of these vicious, stinging pests. We have an area that's easier to live. But the settlers did not listen to the Native Americans, and they just built their houses wherever it looked like it was a good place. And so this whole family was murdered. Well, that family house is still within that family, and they use it now as a house where people can come and spend the night and be scared to death.
Right.
So I did a radio show with someone, with the owner of the house, and I asked them if I could clear it as an experiment. And they said, sure. So I cleared the house, and they said, you know, it was great. It lasted a good week and a half, 2 weeks. But they still continue to rent the house out to people doing, you know, all kinds of tarot readings and Ouija boards, and they would do acting out some super violent elements of the Dungeons and Dragon type of video games.
Mm.
And what they kept shoving the door to darkness open so that
right.
make it very difficult to ever clear that house. And the best I was able to do was move on the dead people in that house. They have no idea who killed them because it happened at night and they couldn't see anything.
Right.
And those people were, you know, wearing dark, and the next thing they know, they were all alone in a house with their bodies. It was very horrible for them. So, interesting.
It's the whole, all of it is fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. And how wide the range of experiences is. We were talking a little bit about the people that don't know they're dead. And how in the world could that happen? And the obvious way is such a sudden death, sudden and unexpected death, that you don't realize anything has changed. Or a death in which you don't have an out-of-body experience where you look down at your body, which now isn't going to work, and go, oh, no, that's not going to work anymore. So so much of the paranormal, quote-unquote paranormal phenomena is ghosts that are completely confused and have no idea what's going on, that most of the assumptions that paranormal investigators are using are, to say the least, inaccurate.
I would absolutely agree with that. I have a couple of books, a couple of stories in this book where one of them is the story of the USS Gregory, DD-82. And the CEO of the ship is very well aware that he and all his men are dead, but the men have no idea they're dead.
Mm.
They think they got off the ship when they were attacked, and they're on this island waiting for the Navy to come rescue them. The Navy is never going to come rescue them. No. And the CEO doesn't have the heart to tell them that they're all just as dead as they can be. And when, you know, I'm finally in the process of crossing them over, they're absolutely astonished. It's like, well, how did you get here? You didn't come. I don't see a ship. What are you doing here? It's like, I've got some other help here. Let's just help you along.
Right.
You see that with battlegrounds everywhere. You see it at accident sites, at plane crashes.
Right.
What happened? It's so sudden. They're knocked out of their body. This could also happen if someone is in a crash of some form, or they hit their head and their consciousness is knocked out of the body. The body's in a coma. It's still alive because the silver cord is attached. And I have a story I'm working on now about that one. And this person doesn't die, but they can't find their body. So the body can't die and the person can't cross over. It's a terrible situation. Terrible right. situation. So sometimes if you bring in an angel to help that person find their body, you can actually facilitate the person's decision to leave or to stay.
Hmm.
And that's a very helpful thing to be able to do.
I always enjoy hearing another way of doing things, because that's not something I would have thought of. So As one person that does it to another, I'm still learning, but I hope the audience is sitting there going, really? What does that all mean?
Right. I think that any effort that a mortal living person makes, whether you know the ghost who's you think is with you or who followed you home or came with the house. I had a ghost in Charleston that came with the house we bought I didn't have a clue how to get rid of him, and that was 35 years ago. I'm a lot more knowledgeable now, like you, constantly learning. So after my first ghost book came out, I was in this gorgeous shopping mall here in San Diego, and I was in a very, very expensive handbag store. And I handed the woman a book card, and I said, oh, I have this wonderful book out. And she says, oh, my gosh, this store is so haunted. And I said, you've got $1,000 handbags in here. And she says, I know, it doesn't matter. There's this creepy guy. I can just feel him. He's in the back room, and I know he's dead. So I remote viewed it, removed the guy, and she called me the next day, and she said, that's great, but we have a bunch more now. In addition to all these women who, shop till they dropped, and then they came back, and they still shopping in the store. So I created the Crossing Over Prayer, which is on my website at tinaerwin.com. Mm-hmm. And if you can't find a medium and you're not sure who to trust, try this prayer. I had one woman, 86 years old, nightmares for 5 years. She could see these people. She said the prayer three times every night before she goes to sleep. No more nightmares. It cost her zero.
Right.
And so whether you believe it or not, it works. And so that's just another tool any person can put in their spiritual toolbox. Prayer is really powerful. So I think that's it's a great opportunity for a mortal person to be of service to a dead person. Ultimately, it will be the compassion each of us will want for ourselves.
Right. Well, my sort of joke is, if you would help a little old lady across the street, why aren't you helping the little old lady to cross? And I have a really hard time with places that make money from being haunted, because they're making the choice to keep the ghost there for profit rather than finding somebody that can help them move on. So it's basically a ghost slave plantation.
Well, and I have another story called The Voiceless Souls of History, and it's about one of the oldest plantations in Virginia, actually in the South, and who all those souls are on that plantation, not just the slaves, but you've indentured servants and the owners. And
I mean,
when I go back out into a public street and they follow me, I can cross them over, but I don't own the property. So I can't just go on the property and start moving people on. So, but I just want your listeners to know that if they are troubled, that they do have the opportunity to go to tinaerwin.com and download the Crossing Over Prayer. It's in multiple languages. I'm working on German now. Not me. I have someone who's doing the German translation. So that anyone anywhere can help someone who's died. Maybe it's your relative, or maybe it's an animal. On the website, there are prayers to help if your animal has died. One of my best, most popular videos is, do dogs go to heaven?
Right.
So some people see the ghosts of their animals, and they need help too. They don't want to leave a grieving owner sometimes.
Right. So. They don't want, and they just enjoy the company and don't really understand what the difference is, so they just hang out.
Exactly. And sometimes an animal can see a dead owner, and it can make the animal sick. So you can do so much service by maybe setting aside a belief system and helping them.
Yep. Well, as usual, we could just keep talking and talking, but we're running out of time. Let's give people your web address and the name of the book again.
My web address is tinaerwin.com. Sorry. And it's Erwin with an E. And the name of the book is Ghost Stories from the Ghost's Point of View. Volume 2 and Volume 1 is also there, too.
Fantastic. And they can find those in the usual places like Amazon. And
Amazon, iBooks, Nook, Kobo in Europe, and and anywhere books are sold, or especially online. We're everywhere.
Fantastic. My guest tonight has been Tina Erwin, the amazing and wonderful, and always a pleasure to chat with. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And if people have gotten curious about this odd guy, David, who does the show, you can go to househealing.com And cleverly hiding in plain view on the contact tab is every technology I could think of for getting in touch with me, including a scheduling link. I do a 20-minute free assessment of whatever's going on with a person, place, situation, whatever it happens to be, to see if my work would be helpful to you. And please take advantage of that. If you want more information about the show, you can go to thefarkasfiles.com. And we've been doing the show now for 4.5 years. I can't believe it. But there are hundreds and hundreds of interviews in the archive right there for you to listen to anytime you would like to, 24/7. We're also on iTunes podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and, of course, EmpowerRadio.com. So please listen not only to my show, but there are shows 24/7 with fascinating people and positive messages. So thank you so much for listening. And until next time, this is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Have a fantastic week.